This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Red Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The bastards are back for this Thursday edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the Toronto Blue Jays dropping the series 2-1. It is their only series loss in the month of June. Boston is still second place in the American League East, still 13 games back from the division leading New York Yankees, but still in the first wild card position. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the city of Canton, Massachusetts, Jason Kelly. How are you, Jason?
I'm much better now that I can finally unclench after those last couple of innings. Jeez, it's never easy, is it? 6-3 heading into extras, you're like, all right, feel pretty comfortable, even against Toronto. And then, of course, it's just never easy, and Matt Strom almost gave it up, but glad they at least escaped with one win. Series loss still sucks, but at least you get some momentum going the right way heading to Chicago, so I'll take it.
Did it feel like a win, though?
It felt pretty good. I mean, you go up against Alec Manoah and you end up beating him. Again, that's pretty good. He's nasty. So it didn't feel like a great win, but solid win. Sure. Yeah.
True. And if you beat Manoah, there's no excuse for losing the other two. Well, except maybe the Seabold game. You're probably going to lose a lot of Seabold games, but... all right, and also joining us tonight from the mile-high city of Denver, by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. How are you, Andrew?
Doing well, 20-6. That is the May we needed, or June we needed, excuse me.
Well, we needed it in May, too.
Yeah, there were 9-13 in April, 14-14 in May, and now 20-6. And, I mean... they salvaged the season. That's exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, and it's not like you have to sweat out one game anymore. You know, if you're a wild card, you get three games.
No, they're in the position. You had to get to 500, then you had to get a game above, then two games above, and yeah, they've just continued to build on that.
Before we get into it, was there a follow-up on Alvarez today? He took that shot in the collision.
Yeah, I think they were both fine. Oh, they were both fine. In the clubhouse after the game.
Okay. Luckily. Well, he got carted off. So I was saying in the war room, I'm like, we kind of need Alvarez, you know, just in case it don't go well for us. We need somebody to, you know, beat the Yankees again. So I kind of weirdly hope that Astros team doesn't get hurt. We're so lucky, though, to have only witnessed one Yankees championship in the last 20 years.
It's true. It's been a while for them. Yeah. I mean, just before the turn of the decade or the century, they won a couple. But yeah, 2009 was the last one, I think. So
yeah,
they're going through quite a drought, at least by their standards. So it's kind of fun to see that.
And Yankees fans have had to watch four of ours. Couple at
that
their,
makes it even better. Yeah,
yeah. A couple at their expense too. So, yeah, hopefully we still need like Nestor Cortez to come down to earth, and Garrett Cole just doesn't. It's not like he chokes in the playoffs, but it just doesn't go his way usually. Yeah. All right. So, was a series loss. Game one was with Connor Siebold pitching. Red Sox dropped that one 7-2. Game two had Michael Wacha. Red Sox lose that one 6-5. And then finally today in the finale, with Nick Pivetta pitching, they win it 6-5. So salvaged one. We are going to start on the dud side of it since we lost. So, Jason, you're in the leadoff spot. Who is your dud for the series?
I'm going with Rafael Devers. 2-for-12 this series. Left six guys on base and just had zero offensive impact. And the game tonight, like, I don't know if Manoah was throwing him off or he was just jumpy up there. He was antsy, but felt like every at-bat he was swinging at the first pitch and popping it up in the infield. It just was, it was not the usual Rafael Devers. Even Euclid pointed it out on the broadcast at one point. He's like, you know, when this guy's on, he's taking pitches, and not necessarily because he's going to walk, but because he kind of likes to see what the pitcher's got to offer. And then he knows which pitch he wants to go after. With Manoah, he was just going up there hacking. I mean, it was pretty awful to watch. And game two, you lose by one run. Rafael Devers left three guys on base in that game. So if he's on in that game, or if he's even half on, maybe he drives in a couple of runs. Maybe you don't blow it in the ninth because you have a much more comfortable lead, you know, if he drives in a couple of those runs. So just a very minimal series from him. And, you know, it's tough. He's your best hitter. So obviously I'm being a little bit nitpicky and harsh on him. But look, you're going up against the iron of the American League here. So you need your best hitter to perform. And the entire 2, 3, and 4 hitters of this lineup just fell asleep, and Devers being one of them. So it's glad they were able to salvage a win despite that. But I'm hoping that we're not about to see the start of a Rafael Devers slump, because that's the last thing this team needs. I don't think it's going to happen, but series like that, you just kind of shake your head and go, all right, need a little bit more from the star hitters here. So hopefully in Chicago, he picks it up and wakes up a little bit.
Yeah, God forbid he took a pitch. I mean, it seemed like the first pitch swinging each time. As Devers goes, the Red Sox go. He sets the tone for them being their two-hitter. I mean, yeah, put the guy that you want the most at-bats in your lineup getting that, and Devers is obviously that guy, and he just wasn't delivering. He had guys on base. He's just stranding them there left and right. It was very uncharacteristic. You don't usually win games when he performs like he did this series. Obviously, we hold him to a higher standard. I think he's earned that. He clearly wants to be paid to that higher standard. So these AL East games are an absolute dogfight. And when you're handicapped going into a series like the Red Sox were, you need Rafael Devers to, you know, be that dude. He's got to be that guy that's stepping up, getting the big hits when you need him. And he was swinging just out of his mind. I thought he was going to fall over a few times like Adrian Beltre used to. And he didn't, but he almost spun himself to the ground like a top. He's got to get right. Hopefully, like you said, this upcoming series will be that. But we need it against our, you know, the opponents that we need to beat, and that's the AL East.
Well, if I can say anything nice about Devers, it's that he only had 2 strikeouts in the series. So, you know, a lot of contact outs. His final at bat in games 2 and 3 were actually walks. So while he didn't drive them in, he took his base and kind of kept the inning going. But he does have those moments where he's trying to do too much. And then there are other moments where he's just, he understands the situation and he's just putting the ball in play. He's just slapping it through a gap, or maybe he just sees the ball out of the hand and crushes one. And we didn't really see any of that this series. And it was such a winnable series despite the bad circumstances we had coming into it. And it was, it was definitely a disappointment. So, Andrew, you're dud with an S in parentheses at the end of it.
Yeah, we saw Jackie Bradley go 0-for the series again. He's in the, you know, the midst of an 0-for-25 stretch here, faced all righties. We saw Tyler Danish try to go two innings. We saw Matt Strom labor through two innings. And behind those two performances, three performances, excuse me, were Jarren Duran and Tanner Houck. And they were very noticeably not there. Cora's pissed. From what it sounds like, Tanner Houck worked himself out of a job. If you take that report that came out that said Whitlock's going to be a reliever, Reed closer when he comes back, and he didn't deny it in his pregame. He said, yeah, we're discussing Garrett's role when he comes back, and bullpen is, you know, a possibility. And then he also said, I guarantee when we come back to Toronto, which fittingly is the last series of the season, all must-win games, presumably. I think we can all assume that at this point. He said, I'll bet you a dollar, I think it was the amount, very trading places bet, that the vaccination statuses of his team will not be the same. And we know that Chris Sale, we know that Jarren Duran and Tanner Houck all can't make the trip north of the border right now. And it's absolutely killing them. Jarren Duran would have started all three of those games. Jarren Duran's been in the best stretch of his career. Granted, it's a young career, but it was facing all righties. If it was facing lefties, I'd be like, well, crap, we're screwed anyways. But it's not, that wasn't the case. He had a chance to solidify his position coming back. Now, if Kike comes back soon and Rob Refsnyder continues to do what he does, who do you think Cora trusts more? Do you think he trusts the two guys that can play defense or the one that can't make a damn read if, you know, it was told to him before the ball was hit? The Red Sox trust defense, and that was the reason for Jackie Bradley coming back. And Duran had an absolute chance to make us forget about Jackie Bradley completely, and that's gone. We saw Tyler Danish should never have pitched that second inning, but the splits were horrendous, and they were a right-handed pitcher short. They're not going to bring up – is it Silvio? I don't even know his name.
Bronco.
And yeah, exactly. I didn't want to butcher it. So I honestly don't know it. And no, they had no other option. It was either Diekman or Strom. They would have been screwed tonight either way if they brought one of those guys in. And yeah, it was just a situation where I've been screaming for on this pod for 2 years to say, Houck is the closer. There's another guy that had a job for the taking. And now it seems like he passed that up. It seemed, you know, they should have walked out of the series with two wins. And they walked out and they're lucky with one.
In a sort of sick way, June 28th was my favorite day of this series because we all know what people were hoping for on June 28th. The Red Sox lose. Shaughnessy comes over the top rope on Twitter with, you know, just the most deserved loss of the season. And, you know, Tanner Houck is enjoying his personal freedom back home in Boston while his team loses. It's just, it's getting so irritating at this point. Like, does Tanner Houck not realize, dude, you've been demoted twice, both after Toronto series that you skipped? voluntarily skipped, by the way. They didn't hold you out. You could have gone if you wanted to. You could have done what Trevor Story did before the season, where he didn't really want to get the shot either. But, you know, teammates kind of said, hey, man, we really need you. We got some important games against Toronto. You're not going to be able to go. And he went, okay, yeah, I want to be able to play there because I'm a competitor and I want to win. So, sure, I'll go do it. And Tanner Houck is going to let himself get demoted twice instead of just, you know, getting the shot and being able to go. It's ridiculous. He went from the starting rotation to the bullpen because Cora was pissed the first time they were in Toronto. And now he's gone from closer to, I don't know, who knows what his role is going to be. Probably just stretch guy now at this point. You know, he'll eat up a couple of innings when they need him to. And as for Jarren Duran, like, yeah, dude, you were off to a hot start. But once Kike comes back and Rob Refsnyder continues to play like this, and, you know, Franchi can still play the outfield too, he's raking right now, there may not be a spot for you. Maybe they just send you back down because they say, well, you're not going to be there in those important games in September anyway, so why should we invest in you? It's just, and look, it, you know, there's always the arguments on both sides, you know, it's their choice and whatever. I get that, okay? But you're in a division where you're going to play games in Toronto that are going to be important. Look at what the Yankees did. Judge and Rizzo were not vaccinated. You know what they did? They got vaccinated because they want to win a championship this year. And they're, you know, they've got a stranglehold over the AL East because they can bring their best hitters to Toronto and they can beat up on the Blue Jays. So they chose to do it because they want to win. So I would ask Tanner Houck, do you want to win? Like, what do you actually want, dude? Like, we all thought you wanted to be a starter because, you know, beginning of the season, you kept poo-pooing anyone who said, oh, what if you go to the bullpen? You're like, nope, I want to be a starter, except if I have to go to Toronto, in which case, no, it's okay. I'll just stay home. Then he gets to be the closer, still not a bad role, and he goes, yeah, no, I'm still not going to go. So, I don't know. Tanner Houck keeps costing himself opportunities left and right. And, you know, Tanner Houck needs to understand, dude, you're not Mariano Rivera, okay? Like, you're not exactly an established closer just yet. You had a couple of really good outings as closer, but for you to be pulling this is a little absurd. And same with Duran. He's a young kid who's just now getting heated up and, you know, decides to stay at home during an important series. So it sucks. The bullpen is a disaster, you know, especially when you don't have Houck to go to against a right-handed heavy team. It's annoying. I still put part of it on management for not building a better bullpen anyway, to the point where you're so reliant on Tanner Houck that when he misses a series, your bullpen is in shambles. That's not good either. So part of this absolutely falls on management for the way the roster is built. But yeah, it's frustrating. I'm glad we don't have to deal with this again until September, because the whole Toronto thing is just really starting to crawl up my backside. So I'm glad that, again, we won't have to deal with it for a few months, but I'm really interested to see what the Red Sox do with both Houck and Duran when they get to Chicago.
So a few things to just kind of build off you guys' takes. With Whitlock, I think he was going to the bullpen anyway at this point. I mean, it makes very little sense with the bodies that we're about to get back to put him in there, especially when he didn't really go onto the injured list on a good note, like, say, Eovaldi, who was pitching fine until suddenly he wasn't feeling well. So I think that was destined anyway. And if Houck goes to the eighth, fine. You know, I mean, Whitlock had a much stronger run than Houck did. So I just hope the strikeouts come back up. I think if he just kind of refines his pitching, I mean, he's got a good slider, he's got a good changeup and a good fastball. Just keep it simple and just focus on that one inning. I think out of the two, Houck's going to get the multi innings though. So I think Whitlock will just be used in the ninth. As far as Alex Cora's comments on how the team will definitely be more vaccinated by September and October, hopefully, You know who that one player is who's definitely getting vaxxed?
It's probably Chris Sale, if I had to guess.
It's Chris Sale. Because yeah. he's already killing himself because he can't stay healthy and he's already missed half the season. So he's not going to miss the first half of the season and then take himself out of the playoffs at this point. Like he's got to get vaxxed. He knows he's not living up to that contract and he's just going to have to bite the bullet and do it. Now, Andrew, you had a quote yesterday, or go ahead. You can weigh in.
I was going to say he's put weirder shit into his belly button yeah. and whatever's going to go into his arm. So, you know, stop complaining.
He's getting vaxxed. I think Cora could probably leverage Durant into doing it. I would think. I don't know what kind of an influence perhaps Durant's parents might have on him. If they're hardcore anti-vaxxers, I could see that getting tricky at that point. But Kike is going to be out for a little while anyway, I think, still. And I mean, Ref Snyder's been fun to watch, but how sustainable is this?
He's got no options, though, Ref Snyder, and he won't clear waivers.
True.
So yeah. that it'll be like, do you want to just lose this player? And that's a big question for Cora and Bloom to ask themselves. I just can't see them. I mean, he's got a 0.8 WAR right now. And he's had like 40 at bats. That's kind of nuts. And tonight he had no chance of catching that ball, that foul ball in right field, and he just went out and dove onto that hard, you know, foul territory. He doesn't want to go, you know, he doesn't want to be a free agent or go back down. I nothing but respect for the way Ref Snyder's played for my behalf.
He played a really good carom off the wall to kind of hold a runner at third as well. Yeah, I love him out in right field. I mean, he seems almost as good as Bradley, quite frankly. And you can see how humble he is in the clubhouse. I mean, he's had some big games and had some interviews after those games, and he doesn't try to talk himself up. He just seems like a guy who knows his place, and he's just kind of happy to be there. So I can see why teams are always claiming him off waivers or signing him to minor league deals and whatnot. I thought I had one other take, but I guess for now with Durant, I think he's almost solidified a spot for now, regardless. I mean, when Kike comes back, then it gets really difficult, but he's just playing so good. I mean, he was getting on base almost automatically in his first at bat. He's working counts good. I mean, this plate discipline is as good as we've ever seen. And I talked about on the last show with Charlie and Job, he was really busy last series out in center field, and a lot of the plays weren't super challenging, but he was getting the repetitions and just was starting to look a little bit more comfortable out there. So curious to see what his defensive ceiling is, if it can get better. And if it does, we might have a bona fide major leaguer. So,
part of what helped Durant was that Jackie Bradley just didn't seize on the opportunity at all and just continues to be dead weight out there except for his defense. So, yeah, Durant probably will be okay, because I just think even if Cora's pissed at him, he's probably much happier seeing him at the top of the lineup in there than having to see Jackie Bradley hit for any reason.
Yeah, Bradley was 0-for-8 this series. 0-for-9 last series, so he hasn't had a hit in a couple series here. I'm going one more series back in my notes here. Let's see. I forget which series this even was, but he was 2-for-10 in that one. So he's 2-for-27 right now in his last three series.
I'm glad that the eye thing is working out for him, though.
I know.
Yeah.
Maybe if they put a blindfold on him and send him up to the plate, he'll start ripping doubles again or whatever. Just unbelievable. All right, my dud for the series. This is going to get kind of at least hilarious for a second, but JD Martinez was 0 for 13. He didn't have a hit. And Devers was a dud, leaving guys on base. When Martinez is 0 for 13 and Devers was as bad as he was, it's almost a miracle that you win a game, really, especially against this Toronto lineup. I'm just trying to see where he was last series. Oh, he had a good last series. He was 5 for 13. Yeah, so he's not really outside of the series, been on a slump. But, yeah, so just terrible. And in that last at-bat, it was an 0 for 2 count. I think this was in the 10th inning. And they were throwing, like, sliders down in the dirt. And he was almost swinging his bat like a golf club. And I'm like, geez, there's no way he's working himself back in this count. There's just no way. I was honestly hoping, I'm like, JD, just strike out looking. We don't need a double play. just strike out looking, get out of the batter's box. And then he ends up getting plunked in the back. And I've never been so thrilled to have a hit by pitch. And that walked in the run, and it was that made it 4-3 in the final game. And then it was 6-3 after that. So terrible series. I mean, he's not a guy who ever goes through these super long slumps. So maybe Chicago will be a nice get right series. If not, perhaps playing the Yankees will get him, you know, up, because a lot of people get amped up for that one. But Jason, thoughts on JD?
Yeah, that hit by bat, or that hit batsman he had to drive in the run, that was poetic justice at its finest, given how Toronto got their panties in a bunch earlier in the game for literally no reason. That was some of the most childish stuff I've ever seen from mostly their manager, but also Vladdy Jr. over there. Yeah, in terms of JD, I'm not overly concerned. He had a good series against Cleveland, down series against Toronto, but he was going up against, you know, Gausman and Manoa, some tough pitching there. The game tonight, he just looked defeated. He just looked like he knew he didn't have it this series, and just it almost looked like 2020 JD Martinez, just waving at pitches helplessly and, you know, really just not seeing the ball at all. So, yeah, it was a frustrating series for him. I think it was a frustrating series for the whole team. I think getting out of Toronto, getting to Chicago where he should face some softer pitching, I think that will get him right. So bad series for him for sure, but I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, thank God for that hit by pitch. I was like, oh my God, don't eject this dude, but they ended up taking him out anyways. But, you know, he strikes out and then at bat, Xander grounds into a double play right after. Our attitude's a hell of a lot different right now. I don't know what's going on. We have a power outage with our 3 and 4 spots in the lineup. It's not good. I'm not too sure what they need to do to get going. What, Xander's gotten like 95 at bats or something like that? It's at least 90 now without a home run. JD's kind of just, I don't know. We got Andrew Benintendi's going on. That's not the recipe that we need, because it's clearly not working. Hopefully the Cubs get him right. Hopefully there's wind blowing out the left center, and he's got to get going here. I mean, he's playing for a contract. We all thought with the way he started off the season that we were getting like 80% prime JD, but it's kind of disappeared a little bit.
I'm cautiously optimistic that, you know, he'll get it together, but the Red Sox are 8-16 against the division, and in the month of July, and really for the rest of the season, it's very AL East heavy, and they got to get going. They absolutely have to get going. You got the bottom of the lineup. They're all stepping up here and there. You know, every night it's someone else having a big game. But you need Devers swinging away. You need Martinez. You need Bogarts being a little bit more productive. Are you guys sold? I meant to ask this a little while ago. should Devers really be in the two hole?
I personally like him there. Yeah. And it's one of those things where Devers is such a good hitter. I'm okay if they shift him around a little bit. If, you know, sometimes he's hitting second, sometimes he's hitting third. I don't want him hitting anywhere further down than that, though. Like, I don't want him hitting fourth. You do need to get him as many at-bats as possible. He still is your best hitter, despite the series that he had. But if he kind of shifts between two and three, depending on what the matchup is or how the lineup's going, I'm generally okay with that. But I do like him in the two hole. I think it's just, it puts a lot of pressure on pitchers. Now, you need a leadoff guy who can get on, which if Duran's playing every day, he's shown that he can do that. So I think between Duran's speed from the leadoff spot, putting pressure on pitchers, and then you got Rafi Devers coming up right after, that's a tough thing to get past. So I actually do like it.
Yeah, I'm 1,000% for Devers, Ben, second at. I mean, he's a doubles machine, so theoretically, if anyone with remote speed gets on at first, lead off the game, you're, you know, on the scoreboard, two batters into the game. So, yeah, gets plenty of ABs throughout the season from that spot. Absolutely.
Well, I just think it gets complicated if Duran's going to stay in the leadoff spot because he's a lefty, and then you got Devers a lefty, and then you got Doogie down in the five hole. So, I mean, it just seems logical to put Devers third. That way it goes lefty, righty, lefty, at least through the five spot in the order. And perhaps maybe Bogaerts, where he's not really hitting much for power right now. Maybe they should tinker with him in the two hole a little bit, even though, you know, we haven't really seen that. But I think it's a weird alignment up there if Duran's going to be at the top of the order.
Yeah, the only counter I would say to that is the way Bogaerts is going right now, I certainly wouldn't mess with it because he's just chopping the ball into the ground. I mean, it's double play after double play with him right now. So even if Duran does get on, if he doesn't steal second, he's going to get wiped out by a double play anyway, the way Bogaerts is going. Now, if Bogaerts starts to drive the ball a little bit more and he figures it out and something clicks, then okay, yeah, I'd be open to that too. And I'm not too concerned about having back-to-back lefties at the top of the lineup because Devers hits lefties. So he's not one of these straight platoon guys where he mashes against righties, but lefties, you know, can get him out. He mashes against lefties as well. So, you know, Verdugo and Duran, I don't think do as well against left-handers, but if Devers still does, then it's having back-to-back of them is kind of a wash because he's so good against both righties and lefties, it really won't matter.
Well, all right. Just one more thing in the duds section here. Hansel Robles has Matt Barnes syndrome. I don't want to see him. I mean, it worked fine in game one. That was a low pressure situation, though. We're down by 5 runs and he's pitching the ninth. His previous 2 months, I mean, there's no justification for trying it again in game two when you're legitimately trying to close it out. You had Strom in the bullpen. You could have pitched him in the ninth. You could have pitched Diekman, who didn't see any action at all. I just think there were better options than putting Robles in there. I don't think this guy is going to find it.
No, I agree. I've never really been that big on Robles. Even, you know, last year towards the end when he was kind of finding himself and was being really effective. This is a guy who's in his, you know, early 30s. He's been around the league long enough. We all know what Hansel Robles is. Yes, he can throw the ball really hard. And, you know, if he's on, he can dot the corner with his fastball, but he's just very rarely on. Usually he's leaving it right over the plate. So there's not much mystery to him. He doesn't have a great pitching arsenal, and he's not clutch. He's not good in clutch and late in terms of, you know, keeping runners off base and not letting inherited runners score. So I agree. I don't want to see Robles in any more high leverage situations. I feel like I'm saying that about quite a few relievers in that bullpen at this point, which presents a whole different problem. But at least with Robles, yeah, no more eighth, ninth inning in close games. No more of that.
I hope he finds it, but it's not looking great right now. You got to just deleverage him at this point and just pick and choose where it's not high leverage, because we know how it's going to end up.
Yeah, I mean, when he had that great finish to the year in September and even pitched pretty well in October, I thought he's just a product of a newly revamped Red Sox pitching program, and this is a preview of what we're going to see with a lot of guys. And so when we signed him to a minor league deal this year, I was like, oh man, wow, I think we might have stole one. And he started off pretty well, but ever since that first Angels series, the guy has just been up and down. And unfortunately, he's very low on my trust ladder. There's so many other guys. I mean, it gets to the point where it's either him or Sawamura. Who do you trust more? And until we got ahead, Sawamura, I think the game was tied. Sawamura was warming up, and he was going to come into that tied game today. So Alex Cora's bullpen management has just been really frustrating this year. I don't think he's been quite as good as years past. So hopefully we just get a little bit more help and we don't have to worry about it. All right. And then just one last thing. Connor Siebold. Is this guy a major leaguer? Is he ever going to be?
I don't know. I like some of his stuff, but the velocity was down, weirdly enough. He was throwing frisbees out there. I mean, it was basically a home run derby. So I still think he can be a big leaguer. I'm not going to write him off after one start against a really good offense, but there were some red flags in there for sure. So he may need a lot more time to cook down in AAA, but we'll see.
He had 27 whiffs, but
That's what I was going to say. His changeup showed about a 60 to 65 grade, which that was no joke. The pitches are there. Yeah, he's still never fully recovered from that arm injury, and he lost a couple miles an hour off his fastball. If he plays in the bullpen, yeah, that is absolutely a pitcher that is valuable. And who knows if they end up moving a Tanner Houck this season or next offseason. I mean, he could be your two-inning bridge guy that, they seem to value, because that you can't teach that good of a changeup. And if they can get him hitting his spots better, his fastball will play up as well. But it was a rough one. But on the road in Toronto on only your first start of the year, it's a tough ask.
Yeah, I just felt like he was getting sat on a little bit, and, very quickly it was a non-competitive game with him in there. So perhaps maybe the bullpen is his destiny, and I think we'd be a little bit more open-minded to that. But I wouldn't be looking forward to his next start or two if they happen to be at the big league level. So, all right, let's flip over to the studs side of things. Jason, who do you have?
My stud is Alex Verdugo. Rafi Devers, one lefty in your lineup, didn't perform this series, but Alex Verdugo showed up 6-for-13, had two hits in every single game. Tonight, he was awesome. Started off the game by making a great sliding catch off George Springer, robbed him of probably an extra base hit there. Had a homer, had that huge double in the 10th, drove in four runs, even was kind of giving it to the Toronto crowd a little bit as he was rounding the bases after the homer, which, when you're winning, you like to see at least. So he was great. He offensively this year, he's been up and down. It's funny because, his average is still kind of sitting at 263 or 265, can't seem to quite get it back up to that 280 mark where he usually is, but I like the way he's driving the ball. I love that he's hitting to all fields. He's not just pulling the ball. He's not just hitting it up the middle. He's going the other way. And, you know, you still see him get robbed a few times. He hits line drives that just either the defense is situated perfectly or, you know, someone makes a really good play and snags it. So he probably could have a lot more hits if he wasn't getting robbed so much. But defensively, he looks great. At the plate, he's getting better and better. He's coming up with a lot more clutch moments. So it's good to see because there's been a lot of, you know, whining and caterwauling about, you know, evaluating the Mookie Betts trade. And, you know, especially after Jeter Downs makes his debut and everyone's like, oh, he's not really hitting. And Connor Wong, what are we going to do with him? And, you know, Alex Verdugo, big part of that trade. He's starting to show up. So, you know, can't really ask much more than that. I would still like to see it be a little more consistent. He does disappear at times, but hey, he was great this series. He helped you win. You know, he pretty much stole the game for you today. So that was awesome to see. And he continues to get that average back up and continues to hit for power. Then maybe he gets bumped up in the lineup a little bit more too. Who knows? So it's just really good to see.
Yeah. I don't know when it was that Mark hopped on this midweek show and I read those Verdugo unlucky, you know, numbers that he had run into. And if we look at a last calendar month, last 30 games for Verdugo, he's hitting 328 with 379 ops, and a slugging is a little low. It's 484. But then you cut that down to last week. He's hitting 429, 500 on base, 750 slugging. This is who we thought he was. This is, you know, who we saw in 2020 when he placed in the MVP voting. And, you know, we're like, oh, my God, we really got something here. We have something here. And it's Verdugo with confidence. It's Verdugo with not getting just screwed with, like Jason said, a perfectly placed defender seemingly every time. Like, yes, gap shot left center. It's like, oh, cool. That guy doesn't even belong there, but he caught it. And I swear to God, he gets two of those a game. And they're starting to fall. He had the big hit today after Xander had a non-competitive at-bat in extra innings. He won that game for them. I mean, we all saw what, you know, the Blue Jays bottom of the 10th looked like. If Verdugo didn't rope that thing up to the wall in left center, then it went. And Verdugo is making a lot of winning plays right now. I saw some people crapping on him for not making that catch in left last night. I'm sorry. If you have to go back on a ball that's completely just drifting with the wind and then scale a wall, that's not routine. He had no chance of making that. It would have been a hell of a play if he did. So people had to get off him on that one. And he's been a great piece to the team for the last month.
He's definitely sitting on a lot of off-speed stuff. Those seem to be the ones going over the fence. And we talked about it in the last show. I mean, he's on pace for only about 70 strikeouts on the season. Like, the dude just doesn't strike out hardly ever. I'm looking to see where he's at. Well, he had 30 coming into the series, and he didn't strike out at all, not one time. So still 30 strikeouts on the season. So quietly one of the better outfielders in the league, perhaps maybe one of the best left fielders in the league. So I hope it continues. He's not the guy I anticipated hitting out of the five hole all season long, but he's certainly being extremely effective at it. And you wonder why Bogarts is kind of struggling a little bit. You know, pitchers are going to have to respect Verdugo at the plate, especially if he's not going to strike out. So yeah, a good series for Verdugo. And I think we got him for, what, two more years after this? Something like that. So hopefully that trend continues. Andrew, your stud for the series.
I went Franchise Cordero. You know, he has three hits in a game against Alek Manoah. Are you serious? He shouldn't. That was unbelievable. Franchi, he's a different player. And I'm glad that the management and core never gave up on him, because he's one of the nicest guys on this team. No one deserves to have more success than him. He's worked his ass off. His defense looked great. He took away a couple hits. Even Uke, when Cordero didn't make a play today, he was like, no first baseman even comes close to getting to that ball. And he was a step and a half away on robbing that one. And I don't know if it was the ninth or extra innings. Franchi has saved that, because, quite frankly, the Tristan Casas injury has been dooming to this team. This is a guy that probably should have been up right now. Dahlbeck would have been back in Worcester figuring things out, getting right, and he hasn't had that opportunity. And Tristan's been out for damn near, like, what, a month and a half now with a high ankle sprain? He's finally hitting off a tee. I mean, those things are terrible injuries. And Franchi stepped it up, and he's solidified a position that was an absolute black hole. So Franchi, four hits today, almost had a fifth, sharp liner on a bounce to the shortstop. Good on him. He was a huge part of this win, and he presents a threat on the base. I love it.
Yeah, what I love is that he's not doing it with a long ball, because I feel like that's all we heard when they got Franchi Cordero's. Oh, wait till you see this guy's power. You know, like, he can hit it 500 feet, and he probably still can. I don't think that he's lost any power by any means, but he's not going up there swinging out of his ass, you know, doing what Rafi Devers did tonight, just trying to, you know, swing for the heavens every single time. He's hitting line drives. I mean, today they executed a great hit and run with him that was really a, you know, huge part of that game. You know, he can hit the ball, you know, on the ground now, using his speed, stealing bases. Like, I knew he was pretty fast. I didn't think that he could be a stolen base threat. So that's great to see too. And the defense has definitely improved at first base. You know, is it perfect? Is he going to be a Gold Glover anytime soon? Probably not, but he's not like what Kyle Schwarber was last year, where every play was an adventure. And because I feel like all I've heard this year too is people lamenting not having Kyle Schwarber. It's like, honestly, you're better off with Franchi Cordero right now, because he can run, he's better defensively, and he gets on base more. He may not hit as many home runs as Schwarber will, but that's okay. Honestly, I prefer this version of Franchi Cordero that's not trying to hit the long ball every single time, because he's having better at bats. He's taking walks, which he never used to do. And he's being a much, you know, much better overall offensive threat. So it's been awesome to see, especially since it keeps Bobby Dahlbeck on the bench. He just still can't figure it out, even though Alex Cora tried to make him a pinch hit threat tonight, which was that backfired pretty quick. One of the ugliest pinch hit at bats I've ever seen. So Dahlbeck is still kind of twisting in the wind. So for Franchi to be picking it up right now, it couldn't have come at a better time, because, like you said, first base was a black hole, you know, for the beginning of this season. And now that Franchi is at least showing he can be a competent everyday player, it's looking a little bit better. So it's awesome to see. Keep giving him playing time, because if he's, you know, if something has clicked and he's figured it out, you're going to need him down the stretch.
He's actually giving you very similar numbers as to what Casas was doing down in Pawtucket. They both have about the same number of runs batted in. Franchi has 12 doubles on the season at the big league club. Casas has 9. Their batting average is about the same. Their on base is kind of similar. I mean, well, maybe not quite similar. That's the one thing Casas is doing very well at in Worcester. His on base is 110 points above his batting average. For Franchi, it's 80, but that's still significant at the major league level. So Franchi is definitely kind of overperforming, you know, more than many of us hoped. He went nuts last year in Worcester, but we were like, well, he's never done it at the major league level. And he's not giving us quite that this year, but he's been more than adequate. He can play first base. You can plug him in at right field. I was going to try to look up Christian Arroyo's numbers versus lefties, but quietly, the Red Sox bench is looking a lot better, you know, with Cordero. Arroyo is showing life, and I think he's getting better and better in the outfield. And I don't know how long Rev Snyder's up here, but like I said earlier, we'll ride the wave for as long as we can. So that's kind of the one saving grace right now with the team. And I just wonder, which way is Bloom going to go at the deadline? I don't think we did a show on it the Thursday before last, but it was last Thursday, actually. But, I mean, you would think bullpen, right? But you got a lot of help internally. I mean, maybe Brian Baio does come up and pitch out of the pen at some point.
Yeah, I've kind of thought this for the last, I don't know, week or two. I think that the Red Sox, you know, everyone's asking if they'd be buyers or sellers. They're certainly not going to be sellers at this point. I mean, they'd have to have the worst July on record to even consider that. I don't foresee that happening. I think they'll be buyers, but I think it's going to be like the smallest move possible. You know, it's going to be bullpen help too. I don't think that at this point, I don't think Keim's too worried about first base or the outfield with Duran and with Rev Snyder doing what they're doing, with Franchi doing what he's doing. I feel like the lineup is okay. The bullpen is clearly the biggest problem. So you might see another Austin Davis type of move this year where he just, you know, talks to Pittsburgh and says, okay, who's pitching well for you this year? All right, we'll give you this kid from AA, and, you know, that's going to be it. He's not going to make a big splash. He's not going to, you know, try to make a huge multiplayer deal. It's going to be small stuff, but I do think it'll be bullpen help because that's clearly what they need the most.
While we're on Austin Davis, I was thinking about this earlier. Can we see Austin Davis traded soon? They don't have the room for any more lefties in this bullpen. You know, they're kind of maxed out with that. Three lefties is a whole hell of a lot of lefties. And they're probably not going to move Diekman, although they might try. You know, his numbers haven't been great, but they're not unmovably bad. Strom, I think they have the most trust in of the three. Austin Davis is out of options and probably pitching a little bit better than he actually is. And with no options, do they move him for a non-48 prospect? Not a good prospect, a 20 to 30 ranked prospect in the system, and move up a Bayo eventually? Or is that where, you know, they acquire a right-handed reliever with one of their 40-man roster crunch prospects coming up? I don't know. I think they could be buyers and selective sellers at the deadline is the way I'm putting it.
Yeah, and certainly of all their lefties, Davis has the most movable contract. I think he's making peanuts. So, yeah, if there's not room for him anyway and they can't move Diekman, then I could see it, sure.
I would definitely rather move Diekman out of the two, though. I mean, I get why Davis is a lot easier to move, but that's what I would like to see. And just for the record, when I asked the question, I knew they were going to be buyers. It was just which area were they going to focus on? And I just feel like we've got a lot of answers internally. I mean, you got Bayo down there. Is Mata going to come up at all, do you think, this year?
He just moved up to AA yesterday.
Okay.
To rehab. They probably won't force him into a major league role this year. It's probably going to be pure rehab, because if you move him up now that there's only the 13 pitchers. You're asking a lot for a guy coming off TJ that's still developing to potentially pitch back-to-back days, unfortunately.
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe they force it, but I don't know about that one. I wish, because he's been nails.
Yeah, and I mean, it's encouraging that he's already at AA, so we'll see. But I mean, it's still an outside option, and you got Frank German. I haven't looked at him lately, but you got to figure he'll probably be up. So that's three guys that could conceivably be up. And Andrew, you're preaching lefties. Guess who else is rehabbing right now? Josh Taylor, another lefty. So, yeah, we'll see. I used to be a big apologist. I got to stop being a bullpen apologist guy because they never work out for me. I sang the praises of Darwin's in the winter before last. Like, he could be the closer of the future. And I just end up looking like a dumbass. All right, so quickly, my stud. We don't have to spend a ton of time, but I think he deserves some praise. Christian Vasquez, 5-for-11 on the series. Very sneaky. He has his batting average up to .291, so kind of flirting with the .300 line. In the last 15 days, he's hitting .375, so that's probably where the uptick was on his overall batting average, but just a very consistent, steady guy to have in your bottom third of the order. And you desperately need a guy like that in your bottom third.
Yeah, absolutely. And gives you professional at bats every single time. I mean, what he put Jordan Romano through tonight, yeah, looks excruciating. It's like, I actually felt bad for Romano. I was like, man, that's got to be so frustrating. He's just fouling everything off, really making him work. It was, you know, and then eventually draws the walk. So, you know, if your catcher's doing that out of the bottom third of your lineup, and he's hitting for power, he's hitting clutch, again, getting that batting average up and, you know, just giving you good at bats, that's really all you can ask for. Defensively, he's been fine. I don't think he's been elite, but he seems to be okay. The pitching staff seems to like working with him for the most part. So that's all you can ask for too. Vasquez has been a lot more valuable to this team this year than I thought he would be. So it's been a pleasant surprise, and they are going to need him big time because, again, it's just, there's so many flaws with the rest of the team, and to have your catcher performing like that is a big help.
Yeah, he's arguably been a top three catcher in the AL this season. Obviously, we matched up against probably the best one in Kirk tonight, and I was dead wrong about Christian. He, you know, I wanted him out. He did start the season off horrendously, so that did add up to some of my Sean Murphy cries. But he's a different guy. He's playing for a contract. I think we get into that a little bit later. He might get it, and I'd be, you know, hard pressed to argue against it.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I don't know if I've actually mentioned it on the show, but the big thing for me was never his offense. It was the dismal numbers starting pitching had with him catching, and Sale had his own personal catcher for a while, except for late last season. I think Vasquez did catch quite a few Chris Sale games, but it wasn't looking good. But the rotation this year has looked really good with Vasquez catching. And even though the bullpen, you know, collectively hasn't worked out, there are still a few guys in there that are having a pretty solid season with Vasquez catching him. Sometimes with some of them, you know, we question the pitch selection a little bit, but man, I didn't expect this out of Vasquez, and he's not going to be expensive. So that just makes me more, you know, lean towards, yeah, he probably will be back. He's been durable too. Has he ever gone on the injured list?
Oh, there's the one season he needed Tommy John. But,
yeah, true.
But that was it. I mean, but apart from that, no, like he doesn't miss like chunks of games. He's been pretty sturdy apart from that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, where are we with time here? Oh, we're at the hour mark. You know what? We'll just skip honorable mentions. There wasn't really a lot. I mean, Pivetta walked three guys today. First few innings were ugly, but he settled down. But aside from that, Schreiber, of course, pitched well. But yeah, let's go ahead and get into the Cubs series. This is our last cupcake series for a little while, so we have to make the most of it. Pulling up the ESPN schedule now. The regular site not updated yet. Tomorrow's an off day, correct? Thursday, I'm pretty sure. So that's probably part of the reason why we don't have complete matchups yet. But we're going to go to the very unreliable ESPN schedule. We'll see. Game one, I think we can trust that it is actually Rich Hill pitching because that would be his turn through. He's up against a guy I've never heard of. I got to get his first name. Adrian Sampson, who is got a... Wow. You can tell. Dead giveaway. I'm not good at navigating this site. I can't even find his ERA. Oh, there it is. 1.69 ERA on the season. Wow, those are elite numbers. And a 0.84 whip. He's probably only started, maybe a handful of games, but against the Cardinals, 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. Start before that, that was June 19th. 4 2/3 innings, no earned runs. And then he had just a 1-inning appearance against the Dodgers. That didn't seem to go well. He gave up 2 runs, but they weren't earned. So I don't know if this guy's a spot starter. Are either of you familiar with Adrian Sampson?
No, I honestly have not heard of him. The only thing I saw is that he's only pitched 3 times this year. Those are really the only 3 games he's pitched.
Okay, that makes
sense. And he's 30 years old, so he seems like sort of a journeyman, maybe spot starter kind of guy, like you said. So not much really going on there.
Yeah, I got nothing. Okay. I'm on my phone trying to figure him out.
Yeah.
He made his debut against the Red Sox in 2016 for an injured Wade Miley that was facing the Red Sox. So he's got that going for him. Then he went to Japan, played for some team called the Wood Ducks in some weird-ass league in probably, you know, the armpit of America somewhere. If this is who they're facing, they better freaking win this game.
Okay. When Jason said 30 years old, I'm like, geez, I wonder if he did go to Japan, because that's kind of the route Ryan Brazier took. But all right. But he is pitching against Rich Hill. So
Rich Hill revenge game against the Cubbies.
All right.
The team he came up with about 98 years ago.
So who are you picking, Jason?
Oh, I'm picking the Red Sox. Yeah, I agree with Andrew. If you can't beat up on this guy, we got some serious issues.
All right, I'll take Rich Hill as well. But I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it. Game two, that's not going to happen. Connor Siebold versus another guy I haven't heard of. Alec Mills, actually, I have heard of him. He's not pitching well this year, though. Alec Mills has a 9.87 ERA with a 1.73 whip. Seems to be on the Dallas Keuchel program. Let's just put it this way. In his last 3 starts in a row, which were against the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Padres, he gave up 5 earned runs in all 3 of those. So is Siebold pitching? Like, are we going to see him and Winkowski in the series?
The Red Sox have Winkowski scheduled on their website.
On Saturday? Okay. Yeah. ESPN has still has
I think they said, I feel like Cora said Seabold was getting Sunday earlier. Let me look it up.
Oh, so maybe they're just going to flip-flop then?
Yeah, kill some time for me here.
All right. It's all good. Even if Seabold's pitching, I mean, that might be a competitive game since the other guy's so bad.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's Seabold or it's Winkowski, I still like the Red Sox in this one. Alec Mills is terrible. He's really bad. Doesn't have great stuff. Throws 92, 93, just soft stuff. You know, got lit up by the Pirates. I mean, you get lit up by the Pirates, you must really stink. So I don't, whether it's Seabold or Winkowski, Red Sox should put up at least 5 or 6 on this guy. So I'll take them in game 2 as well.
I'm fairly confident in saying that it's Winkowski and the Red Sox will win this game.
Yeah, if it's Winkowski, I almost feel good about almost any matchup, really, as long as we're hitting. I mean, Winkowski's been pretty solid. He had that shaky debut, but in the 2 or 3 games since then, pretty solid. All right, back to the schedule here. Cubs have just really gave up. I thought they were going to be better than this year, like a fringe wild card maybe, but.
Well, I mean, they had Suzuki come out like gangbusters, and then, you know, he started cooling off like a rookie, and then I'm pretty sure he cut off his own thumb to avoid the team because he's been out for like 2 months now.
Oh, has he? I was just about to look.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been done with a thumb injury for a while. It's kind of weird.
And we don't get to see our favorite guy, Stroman, either, because he's on the IL. So.
Oh, is he?
Jesus. Yeah, they're without him, too. So
Wilson Contreras, I guess, is the highlight of the series for the Cubs.
That's about it. Maybe Ian Happ, too, but yeah, that's about
maybe,
it.
Maybe we can make some bad blood before he's straight to the Yankees in July.
So game 3, so are we going Seabold in that game?
It seems that way, yeah.
That's what Twitter seems to be saying, so.
Okay, well, Twitter's always right. Keegan Thompson in game 3, I'm not familiar with him either. 3.34 ERA on the season. He's 7-3, so he's basically pitched the whole season. Looked, well, he did get tagged for 4 runs against the Reds in his last start, but his 3 starts prior to that, he gave up 1 run against the Pirates, shut down the Atlanta Braves, no earned runs over 6 innings, and then, and that was it, because he only seemed to last 2/3 of an inning against the Yankees, and he gave up 3 earned, 5 runs overall, 3 of them were earned, so... You know what? I'm going to put that as a loss for the Red Sox if it's Seabold.
I'm actually going to do the same. Yeah, if it's Seabold, I think Keegan Thompson might be Chicago's best pitcher, which isn't saying much, but it's at least saying a little something. Apart from that hiccup against the Reds, his last couple of starts, he was racking up strikeouts, looking really good. I don't know if the Red Sox have ever seen him, so that's another thing that Red Sox tend to – struggle against guys I haven't seen before. So, and I don't have enough confidence in this team right now to pick a sweep, even against the lowly Cubs. So I'll take Chicago in game 3.
Well, this is weird. I was taking them too, mainly just because Keegan Thompson's, you know, he's got a lot of good metrics on Baseball Savant, and those are the guys that the Red Sox seem to struggle with. But more so, I think the Red Sox are going to be trying to rush through this game. They have an early game against Tampa on Monday, you know, after traveling. So I think they're going to completely overlook this. I think we're going to see them sleepwalk through the first like 6 or 7 innings thinking, you know, they can just show up and win. I think Toronto, I think Chicago might be able to steal one here.
Agreed. Hopefully we'll just take the sweep, but Monday's the 4th of July, is that correct? Yeah.
Okay. Yep, sure is.
That's why it's an early game. All right, well, we will be back tomorrow, on Friday with Deep Dive. So hope everybody's having a good week. Take care.